And it is time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. One thing we've noticed about running a monthly media segment in 2018 is that the topics come fast and furious. We can try to lock them up, the topics, a few weeks in advance, but the gush of news frequently shuffles our deck right up to the last minute, and that's okay. There's always plenty to talk about, and we do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. Our regular guests are here, Andrew Gay from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
And Precious Yamaguchi, also from the Communications Faculty.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you both here. So let's step back a bit in time. I guess we'll do the reverse thing where we start older and move up to newer, because the Roseanne thing hit in the last month, and this is I've seen TV shows end because the stars died suddenly and things like that, but this is the first time anybody sending out a racist tweet stopped a high-rated TV show, to my knowledge anyway.
Yeah, I felt it was such a racist tweet that it was going to be one of those comments that are just hard to ignore throughout a type of TV series. And she's been controversial and very outspoken all through the 80s and 90s. But I think there's a difference between sort of snarky jokes versus something that is really offensive.
It is interesting, though, how somebody could be in the comedy business as long as she has and not realize there are probably some jokes you say to your friends in certain contexts and jokes that you would then say to the public, and they're not necessarily the same thing.
Well, I mean, the thing we need to remember here is that if you go back through Roseanne's older tweets, that is by far not the most offensive thing she has tweeted. ABC greenlit a show with Roseanne knowing who she was.
Taking a risk.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was a terribly offensive tweet, but Roseanne has been, for a couple of years now, tweeting some pretty outrageous stuff, lots of conspiracy theories and a lot of disturbing material. And so I think a lot of people, when she got this show, were upset that ABC would even go there. So I think, I applaud their decision. I think it was the right thing to do to make a firm statement. They did it pretty quickly. I think it was like
within 24 hours.
Yeah, like days days before, because the upfronts were right around that same time.
That's right. Yeah,
and so they were celebrating. We're bringing Roseanne back, and then like the next day we canceled Roseanne. So I think they made the right call there, but I think there's also reason to raise the question of like, well, you know, how are you making the decisions of what shows to green light in the first place? Why are you giving that soapbox to a figure who's already made racist statements on Twitter?
Which I guess gets us into a larger zone, and you were just talking about the upfronts, which I had to deal with for years working in network TV or local stations with network TV, was the idea that every May they come out and they have these big celebrations of what their new shows are, and people do songs and dances, and they used to be held at places like Radio City Music Hall, the upfronts for ABC, for example. And, you know, if you got a star in a show that's working, you milk it for everything it's worth. And I was working in promotions at the very time that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was on, and sometimes 5 days a week. So, I mean, you really flog your lead horse until it keels over.
Right.
In this case, the horse keeled over unexpectedly, didn't it?
Right, quickly. Yeah, and there's rumors that they might keep the cast and crew going in some form. You know, there's talk of, you know, can they do a spinoff with the characters? I know there's some controversy about that because Roseanne owns some stake in those characters, having created them. And I even read that ABC is possibly considering doing a completely different show with new characters, but the exact same cast and crew. So I don't know whether that will fly or not. But it's clear that ABC knows that they still have something of value here. They don't want to lay off all those people who are working on the project, and they're not sure how to move forward.
So one of the more interesting tweets of all time, I think, came in response to Roseanne saying that this was partly done. Her bad tweet was done under an Ambien haze, and the company that makes Ambien tweeted out that while all pharmaceutical treatments have side effects, racism is not a known side effect of any Sanofi medication. So
hashtag sick burn.
Yeah.
Well, so the world through Twitter is anybody who's really not on Twitter at this point, at least aware of Twitter, is missing a whole bunch of conversation that goes on, aren't they?
Everything moves so quickly on Twitter. It's almost hard to keep up because there's just so much information going through your feed, and being conscientious too. I think our message is always consistent of making sure you check your sources and fact checking, because there could be a lot of miscommunication on Twitter, and it just moves really quickly.
But this is really a nub of where the media universe lies at the moment, I think, because the fact is that people who've been in media business for a long time, who get hired for jobs like the people who work at JPR, have some expectations placed upon them about knowing what they're saying before they say it,
yes.
As opposed to when it's all democratized and everybody can broadcast to the world.
That
is not one of the things that's layered on top of you. It's like, you make sure you know exactly what you're talking about before you put it out there.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
You know, I think along the same time that Roseanne was getting renewed and then canceled, another Twitter story that I don't think is even on our list, Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Expanse, two other TV series, were canceled by their networks. And fans on Twitter just went crazy about it. And then very quickly, other distributors leapt in and snapped up those shows. So NBC picked up Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Amazon.com Amazon Prime is going to pick up The Expanse. So it's interesting that there's now this conversation. You know, I think one distributor can say, well, this content isn't working for me anymore. But if there's that fan support on Twitter, things happen very quickly.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see it happen through Twitter, though, because I've seen this happen before in network TV, where shows jump networks long before there was a Twitter. Taxi, I guess, changed networks. The Monkees changed networks.
Family Matters changed networks.
Oh, did okay. Well, and then Star Trek, which only made it to 76 episodes anyway, the original version was going to be stopped at around 50, but people sent in letters. They got piles of letters at NBC. You know, letters like, I will pluck the NBC peacock one feather at a time. So action. Okay, so let's contrast what happened to Roseanne with what didn't happen to Samantha Bee, who still has a job at TBS doing Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, which is more of an in-your-face kind of political show to begin with. But, you know, she referred to the daughter of the president of the United States as a feckless C-word.
Right.
Well, I felt that it's not that surprising with the show being called Full Frontal.
Mm-hmm.
and she's... She could be pretty crude, but very straightforward on her show. I think that the family of Trump, they are open to the public in all types of criticism in that way. So I didn't find it incredibly surprising.
I think a big difference between the two, because I saw a lot of people saying like, oh, well, how come Samantha Bee can say that, but Roseanne can't say that? There's also power dynamics, the difference between a white woman comedian calling a distinguished and accomplished black woman a monkey, and a white comedian calling a white daughter of a president, and both women, the C word. I saw one African-American commentator on Twitter saying, like, you know, folks, it's fine. You know, just like we can call each other this word and you can't, they can call each other this word and we can't.
Like, so woman to woman, it's okay.
Right. Saying that, you know, there's a power dynamic there that's different than when a white person calls a black person a racial epithet, than when one woman calls another woman this in critique. So as a man, I'm not going to jump into my opinion of that. But, I think that's something to acknowledge, at least.
I feel Samantha Bee uses language that is consistent with that. I don't condone or promote women calling each other any of those names at all, but she's also a comedian, and I see where she's going with it.
All right, so let's move on. This is our Signals and Noise segment with Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join in at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Far from comedy this week, let's talk about the departures of first Kate Spade and then Anthony Bourdain.
both of them were affiliated with the media at some point. Kate Spade, she worked at Mademoiselle magazine, which no longer exists, and had a really, really successful business. But I teach a communication course in fashion and media. And on our first day of class, what we talk about is how fashion is actually a really, really difficult business. You never see it, how difficult it is in fashion magazines or on Instagram, but it's a business where there's an abundance of products that don't get sold. You always have to change your products every single season. And also, there's so much debt that goes into fashion. I worked at a fashion magazine when I was in Los Angeles, straight out of college. And I was very lucky because I was an intern. So I didn't have the pressure of being super fashionable or taking people out to lunch or throwing parties. But people that are very much embedded in that business and culture, there's so much pressure to keep up.
Was it like the Devil Wears Prada at times?
It is, because everyone has to be of that season, and everyone is also just waiting for a moment where they can step up into a higher position. And there's not that many positions open for people to high positions. So I could understand that there's certain types of pressure, and it's just a very, very difficult business.
I appreciate the perspective you've been able to share there from your own experiences in fashion. Anthony Bourdain was much more squarely in the media, though, on CNN primarily, with the traveling the world and getting to know people through food. And the fact that both of these were suicides, too. I mean, I know that there are people in the mental health field who see an opportunity now to see, look, suicide and depression happen to lots and lots of people.
Yeah, I think it's, obviously tragic. Also a good reminder that, it's not – depression is an illness. It's something that often doesn't exhibit outwardly. People often say, check on the quiet person, check on the person who looks sad. Also check on the highly successful person who looks like they're happy, because we don't know who is struggling, right? So I think it was kind of one of those reminders that doesn't matter how successful you are, doesn't matter how beloved you are, doesn't matter how apparently happy you appear to be to everybody else, you might be going through a really terrible struggle. And so I think it's just kind of a reminder in this media world, in the social media world, that there's still no substitute for human connection and making sure that, I'm checking on my neighbor and seeing how they're doing with life and seeing if they need someone to listen to.
Excellent point. Electronic FaceTime is not the same as FaceTime with real human beings. Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange with Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay. Here is a call from Philip in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, hi. I'm enjoying your show once again. Going back to the Roseanne saga and the shock therapy that she speaks of, the way that she talks.
Uh-huh.
Where's Ann Coulter? Why don't they put her on the show with Roseanne? it's the same difference, as far as I'm concerned. The shock type statements make the news.
They do indeed. Thank you for that, Philip. I appreciate the perspective. And which reminds me that, we had shock jocks 30 years ago now, I guess. Was that when Don Imus was starting to do his thing and Howard Stern followed in his footsteps and stuff, just saying things that were outrageous just because you could, which sort of morphed with the political over time. But it's interesting, though. Maybe Ann Coulter could replace Roseanne.
Well, I think, obviously, your standards for your sort of niche shock channel of entertainment is going to be different than ABC. I don't expect to see that happen, but you never know.
Truly. So let's move on and talk about journalists and their perceptions in the world, because Elon Musk kind of piled on this week with discussion of a website to rank journalists.
Pravda is what...
Pravda, wants it like the old Russian Truth newspaper.
Yes,
huh?
I thought it was interesting that it's a Russian word. And there's just been so much news around Elon Musk this past couple of months, and the whole event of the possibility of the stocks, Tesla stocks, going down, and people betting on the shorting of the Tesla stock dropping.
And just as I was walking you guys in, the news of 3,000 layoffs at Tesla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the layoffs. So there's always something going on with him. And I think he's very concerned about the way that Tesla and himself are being covered in the media. So I think that's why his concern of having this type of website.
I think so much of our culture has kind of settled on this idea of the benevolent billionaire that, the benevolent billionaire will come save us all. And Elon Musk has this cult of personality of all these people like, he's a good one. He's going to take us to Mars. He's going to build a tube under the dirt. And I think it's just a kind of a reminder that, as we continue to rely on the benevolent billionaire, we have to remember that they have their own interests and often thin skins. And yes. When suddenly there's unfavorable media coverage for something they're doing, they're going to do what they need to do to protect their own image.
So here's an actual tweet from Elon Musk. "I've just had it with sanctimonious journalists who appoint themselves protectors of the public interest and yet believe that same public is too stupid and immoral to assess their credibility. It's amazing that you don't understand how insufferably hypocritical that is." Wow. Contrast that with a Donald Trump tweet from, I guess, yesterday. "So funny to watch the fake news, especially NBC and CNN. They are fighting hard to downplay the deal with North Korea. 500 days ago, they would have begged, in quotes, for this deal. Looked like war would break out. Our country's biggest enemy is the fake news so easily promulgated by fools." So billionaires, or at least rich people anyway, in positions of power, taking out the media because they don't like what they're hearing.
Yeah, I think the latter statement is, I think, far worse, coming from the president of the United States on his Twitter account, having just met with a brutal dictator who has murdered lots of people and imprisoned and tortured other people, saying that the enemy of the United States, in which the free press is one of the most important founding principles, saying that the enemy of the United States is the free press is pretty alarming to me.
Yeah, and having this idea of silencing people who are doing their job and also putting fear into people who are reporting and doing their job as well. So I agree. The the later statement, the Trump's.
When you have a media outlet and a big one, and this is Fox News I'm talking about, that does take sides, over time, does that reinforce the perception that journalists take sides? In other words, does Fox News create the very conditions it claims to deplore?
I think in media, there are times where different types of media take different sides. As I mentioned before, we saw all the way back in World War II during different types of...
the headlines about Japanese troops.
Headlines about Japanese people and newspapers. So we are conscious that different media outlets, they do have different type of sides. We hope that journalists, they are doing proper reporting and not being biased, not taking any type of gifts or any type of incentives from people. But it's good to have, if you do have one side, to have a contrasting sides or diverse points of view.
Let's take a call from Tony and Talent, going back to Samantha B. Welcome to Signals and Noise with Andrew and Precious.
Yes, I was interested in the Samantha B. phenomenon. I've never seen the woman myself, but from what I read and I heard the bits that were offensive, the use of an expletive is one thing. It's just a further diminution of standards. But I was very interested in the fact that... she also said something to the effect that the daughter of the president should put on a slinky dress, low cut, and sidle up to her father and try and persuade him to do something or other. I think this is something to do with immigration. And obviously the implication is of incest. Humor surely should have a little bit of an element of truth to it, but nobody took offense at the incest implication. And I wondered, is this a way, I mean, we're now, apparently racism is really bad, even though it's demonstrably diminishing in this country compared to what it was 50 years ago. And yet incest is perfectly okay for these people.
Well, let's pick it up from there, Tony. Thanks for that. And I must admit that, that The Daily Show. Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah.
That's why I had his name backwards. But he used to put things in the bottom of the screens. Remember, Donald Trump wants to date his daughter, so this is not a new joke.
Donald Trump is on record saying, "If she wasn't my daughter, I'd probably be dating her." I mean, that is a Donald Trump quote, and it's not the only time he said things like that. So, you know, I think comedians latch on to things when someone says something that's a little like off kilter and slightly uncomfortable. You latch onto that and make jokes about it. You know, I don't think that's coming out of left field of, you know, it would be, I think, totally different if suddenly someone started making comments about, you know, Barack Obama and his daughter or George W. Bush and his daughters. Neither of those men ever made comments about their daughters that we would say, like, that was odd. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's where that's coming from.
Yeah, from years ago, he was making those type of comments. Nothing new.
Yeah, okay. So we have about a minute and a half for a pick three from the two of you. So why don't we start with Precious?
Okay, I can't help but mention Anthony Bourdain because I have followed him for so many years. I just wanted to point out some of my favorite countries that he's been to, which was Vietnam, Burma, and Congo. I actually really like seeing him get grumpy while he's traveling because I feel like being grumpy when you're traveling is very real sometimes. I also wanted to mention Conan O'Brien and Jordan Solansky. They do an Italian road trip together that you can see on TBS and also YouTube. It's really hilarious, but I love the backdrop and just, again, kind of watching two guys be grumpy while traveling. And then on Instagram, I've started this new account that documents dressing for academia. So it's not so much your typical Instagram fashion account, because in academia, I feel that a lot of professors, we are wearing stuff that we wore in grad school mixed with something that we bought this year and going through the decades, but dressing for work. So it's called All But Dressed.
All But Dressed. Okay. And a quick pick three from Andrew.
Yeah. Well, my first is shameless self-promotion. We have a new a Twitter account for our digital cinema program here at SOU. It's at Cinema Oregon. So check that out to follow what we're doing and our students. I latched on to Brooklyn Nine-Nine myself when I saw the uproar over it getting canceled. And so I've been binging that on Hulu and having a great time. And then, you know what? I liked Solo. Okay.
Did you? Okay.
It was, you know, it was not the best Star Wars movie ever, but I went in with low expectations, and I said, that was a good time.
Good. Okay, Solo. That is good to know, because, yeah, a lot of people deriding it, but, you know, Star Wars movies have high expectations to meet. Andrew Gay, Precious Yamaguchi, Signals and Noise, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.